Welcome to Yip Podcast. This is Mary.
And this is Tammy.
Yip. And today we are going to be playing an interview for you guys that we got with Grey Wolf
a little while ago.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, if you don't know, you don't know who Grey Wolf is? Well, we'll tell you. You should know. Grey Wolf is an awesome percussionist here in the Central Florida area. He spent some time on the West Coast the past couple years, but now he's back in town and he's just on fire.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Speaking of being on fire, he's part of a group called Flammable Babylon. So it's just a sign that he's a rising, shining, blazing star.
And he's flammable.
Yeah.
Don't touch.
Don't set him on fire, because he could be on fire if you do that, because he's totally flammable. Sounded better in my head before it got out of my mouth.
But besides, anyway. besides having the Flammable Babylon, he also teaches drumming. He's got several classes that he offers at various locations. He also organizes drum circles.
He also makes jewelry.
And he makes jewelry. Very cool jewelry.
So versatile. And he's a smart guy. So that's a cool, really interesting interview. So stick around. Don't change that dial, yo. Now time for these important commercial breaks. Do, 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 do. Okay, just kidding.
We're still here.
We haven't sold out yet, but we will if anyone's willing to pay us.
We'll totally sell out.
She totally. So that's coming up. But before we get to that, what's going on, Tammy?
OMG. So like the last episode, I know I brought up Tempest's newest blog, and I'm bringing it up again. She just keeps posting some very interesting things, things that I enjoy personally. And I like the name of her blog. It's called Tempest's Teapot.
I thought that's so hysterical.
I just think it's the cutest name ever. So one of her blog posts is called Roots and Shoots, the Almighty Tree of Style.
Heavy.
And she's got a very pretty picture of a tree with a little gnomey guy thing. I don't even know. Looking out at the tree. Which is kind of creepy, but you know.
Like a Keebler elf?
Yes, but it looks like it's made in the tree. It's like carved in the tree. Anyway, you'll have to go to the blog and then you'll see the picture.
Fine. Pushy.
So anyway, what the blog is about is she talks about, you know, the tree and that it has roots and branches. And the same thing happens with students as well as professionals. They struggle with their identity and classification as a dancer. And they feel that they have to choose a specific path. And she feels that you should just have strong roots and always honor your roots, because that's where you grow from. But then you can branch off.
Ooh.
And have your own style. And so you could be a tree. You could be a tree. I love the fact that you could be a tree. I was like, trees rock. This is the best pose ever. I don't know. I was just like way excited when I read it. So that's one of her blog posts. The latest post she put up was called In a Nutshell. I'm just going to read it real quick. She says, dancing is for everyone. Performing is not, quoteth me. Meaning that everyone can dance and should, regardless of age, gender, size, ability. When we say the dance is accessible to all, that's really what it is. Dance is an amazing part of the human experience. But taking it to the performance level, particularly in a professional capacity, is not for everyone, and we shouldn't expect it to be.
Word.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to professionally perform dance in order to enjoy it and share it. Dance to love to live. So that, I just was like, that's the perfect post. It's so simple and to the point. And I totally agree. I love dancing. Do I want to perform all the time? Not really. I mean, I like to perform, but...
Really? Because it seems like you want to perform all the time.
Yeah, because I'm out there every week.
What?
I'm just I'm out in front of my house for my neighbors.
I've noticed that. It's getting awkward.
No, I mean, I enjoy performing, but I love dancing more. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, I like to dance all the time, but I don't always feel like performing.
Yes.
So do you think she's saying that, like, do you think she's saying that, or do you think she's saying some people should not perform?
I think she's saying some people should not perform. But
who are we going to pick to not perform?
Well, not everyone wants to perform.
That's true.
Some people are, you know, they're doing this either just for health benefits. They're doing it just to get out of the house, sometimes get away from their families. So, you know, just have a girls' night out or even a guys' night out in some cases.
I think drunk people should not perform.
Probably not.
Although it can be entertaining.
Sometimes. Sometimes not so much.
No, I said can.
Picky.
Well, I'm just saying.
But no, I get what you're saying. But I try and take, when I read blogs, if I can, I try and take it for what it would mean for me. And for me, it would mean just because I enjoy dancing doesn't mean I have to perform.
That's true.
Sometimes I just want to dance.
Nothing relevant to add. I'm just like, it's okay. Dance.
Just put our...
put our pocketbooks and shoes. Just stand in a circle around our pocketbooks and shoes and just dance. Forget guys tonight. I just want to dance.
And believe me, there are some days I want to do that or I want to come home and do karaoke. One or the other. So
name that comedian, yippers.
You're not getting anything, but you could name it and it'd be interesting to see how many people got it. I think a lot.
I think a lot would get it.
So that's kind of all I had this week to discuss.
Wow, you were kidding when you said not much.
I have much.
It's been a crazy week.
It really has. This is my busy season at work, so I'm not really home much right now. So being on the computer basically 13 hours during the day does not lend itself to me wanting to just be on the computer all night.
Oh, I know.
So what do you have going on, Mary?
Well, Tammy, I'm so glad you asked. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. So I have lots of little things, though.
Okay, cool.
So first of all, our favorite Seattle duet, Copper Clock, has been doing some workshops out in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Go take a workshop with Letty and Sarah Kate, because they're awesome. And they do cool things with arms. So, other news. Did we talk about Double Take Belly Dance last week? Last time we recorded, which is like a million years ago? I don't think we did. I think you showed me the website, but we didn't talk about it.
I don't think we did either.
So let's talk about it. Okay.
Totally dancing.
Double Take Belly Dance, Shay's new group, Shay's new collective, Shay's new website.
Yes, and yes.
I couldn't find the right word, but awesome. It's a cool site, just kicking off. She's switching everything over there. She mentioned us.
Yeah, it was so awesome. We were like, eee, mentioned us.
It was pretty exciting.
Kendra from Hands of Kali mentioned us on her blog as well.
No way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yay.
Can you feel the love tonight?
And I am.
Oh my, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Get back on my side of the table. And I love reading Shay's blog. On a side note, one thing I like about her blog, which has nothing to do with dance, is that I love that she posts up her knitting projects.
Yeah.
Because I love to
see
what she's
doing. Sometimes she'll post recipes, too.
Yes. Just saw that. She has a very warm blog. Warm and friendly. Yeah. Friendly blog.
You get to know a little about her and a little about her dance.
Yeah. What else is going on? Oh, Shira.net. Both of us saw that thing on Shira.net. Posted a little while ago about Kesha's Take It Off song.
And I about like that how song.
I love it. Her music is so trashy and it's addictive. I love dancing to Kesha.
And I like her because she's in on the joke. You see what I'm saying? Like she knows.
Kesha?
Yeah. That she
is. She really?
She is. She totally is.
Are you sure? Did she say that? Or do you like get a glint?
Her Twitter name is Kesha Sucks. So I'm pretty sure she's in on the joke.
I don't know. Some people say things like that, but they really mean Kesha's awesome. And I'm trying to show that I have a sense of humor. You can't trust that.
There's something else that she did that I was just like, she totally gets it.
She can't sing to save her life. She can't sing her way out of a paper bag. She can barely chant, but her music is very catchy. It's very well produced. So yay. But they were talking about the beginning of the Take It Off song, which is to that Middle Eastern melody. That's like the snake charmer thing that's in like every
Cairo
cartoon
or something, yeah.
Since the beginning of time. Little snake. Which I didn't even pick up on. Tammy's like, oh yeah, totally. And I'm like, dude, what do you mean totally?
There's a place in France where the naked ladies dance. Hello.
I know. I didn't. Shira. First of all, there are children in the room. Anyway, so it was funny because a couple people were like, went to go see the video, and were like, oh, just horrified about how the video is inappropriate and scandalous and didn't make any sense. And then someone was like, well, it doesn't make any sense because that's not the video. Somebody just put some video to her song and that's why it doesn't make sense. And there's like this resounding silence on the thread, like, oh, well, we'll find something else to criticize. Then we'll be back.
Although her video is kind of silly. Like, I know this may be inappropriate if you're a young listener, but
oh my goodness,
that's if you totally don't know, her song "Take It Off" is definitely about a strip club, and
all of her songs are totally skanky, but they're fun.
But you know, so I really thought her video was going to go in a different direction, but no strip clubs in her video, so just colored powder.
It's probably drugs. Drugs, Tammy. Anyway. That had no point. We just thought it was funny. Yeah. So that's on Jira.net. Oh, Rachel Bryce, or RB to those of you who are a fan, posted on her blog that they're going to be doing the Costa Rica retreat again in late January. They just finished it at the end of August. Her retreat was at the very end of August. And on the 30th of August, she posted, hey, it was so much fun and people liked it so much. We're going to do it again in late January.
Wow.
So save your money because we're coming back in 4 months. So
I'll have to put that on my events newsletter.
Totes. Do it. Put it on there because it's coming. And the price seems really reasonable. I mean, it's beyond my budget and I can't take that time off. But $2,000 for like the whole shebang. Yeah, it's like a week lot of awesomeness. I mean, that doesn't include plane fare, of course. But like everything else is included. Like food, lodging is included in that budget. So
that's cool.
Oh, the last thing I have to talk about, I think, is, oh, I found another blog called vagabondprincess.com, which is the blog of Samantha Hasthorpe, who is the lovely British fusion dancer. Who, I don't know if she still is. She might be. I have no idea. She was at one time, at least, with the Belly Dance Superstars. She might still tour with them. I have no idea.
And what's the name of her blog?
Vagabond Princess.
Cute.
I know, right? And I was reading up on her because I was like, oh, nice name. She's super into like eco-friendliness and being really green. There was a period in her life where she sort of traveled all across Europe, like in a caravan. And so I'm assuming that's kind of where her name was birthed. So,
wow.
I like her blog, but the last post that I read of hers was about her taking a clown class. And I liked it because she had, at the top, she had a picture of some of John Cleese's poses from the Ministry of Silly Walks bit on the Flying Circus. So that made me laugh. To any of you Python fans out there, I recently decided that I should have been born British. It might pass, but I just I feel like
it might pass.
I feel, you like, know, next I week, like,
maybe I should. I like be America. From Australia.
I like America. You know, USA is fun. Go USA. I mean, kind of act like jerks sometimes, but
no I think one's everyone perfect. Does. Yeah,
no one's perfect, right? But I just feel like I have a British sense of humor. And luckily, I am friends with a very lovely British couple on Facebook and they've offered to adopt me. So I wanted
Sorry,
to
Mom
let,
and Dad.
I wanted to let everybody know that once I move to Britain, the Yip podcast format will probably change a bit.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a podcast. You could Skype in.
Totally. I'm totally going to Skype in. Going to be interesting.
We'll use cameras.
Oh my god. And I'll probably start getting an accent and stuff, so just heads up on that, guys. So that's all that's going on with me. That's all I have.
Do you have music though?
I do.
Okay.
And actually this ties in with the whole Samantha Hasthorpe thing. So the first group we're going to hear is a group called Ratatat, and they're a electronic music duo from New York City consisting of Mike Stroud and producer Evan Mast. And they first came to my attention when I was like YouTube hopping, watching some videos, and I saw Samantha Hasthorpe of Vagabond Princess fame.
Awesome.
Performing with a couple of other girls to this song called Swisha by Ratatat. And I was like, that is a really sweet song. So I downloaded a couple of their CDs and they're really, really cool. The three songs we're going to hear, the first one is called Lex, and it kind of has this 80s rock kind of vibe going on. The second one is Spanish Armada, which slows down a little bit. And the third one is my favorite, which is the Samantha Hasthorpe one called Swish It. It does some really neat rhythmic things that are a little unexpected and interesting. So I think you will enjoy it. So here we go.
I liked it. First of all, the name Rat-a-tat.
I know. Sweet.
So cute.
Sweet.
And I think I like that song, Swisha.
I do too. So there you go with our first music selection. And with that, let's go ahead and start the countdown to the
interview.
Grey Wolf interview. Beep, beep, beep. 3, 2, okay, so let's go ahead and get started with our interview. Our guest tonight is Grey Wolf. Woo! Grey Wolf is a fantastic drummer who is performing and living in the Orlando area.
And when we say performing, you're like everywhere. You have events going on like all the time.
Well, I'm discovering I'm kind of in a second incarnation almost, since I am making the effort to entirely make my living doing only things that I deeply care about. It takes a lot of time to actually make a living with a drum. It takes a serious time investment. So it takes a lot of events. But yeah, I have been really, really blessed since I returned to Orlando to have found a great deal of synchrony with old friends who are still into doing things, new friends who are into doing things, and the community has changed and grown so much, and the possibilities for doing work in some of the healing areas of drumming and so on that I've spent a lot of time studying, attaining certification in, is I think much greater than it would have been years ago when I was here before.
Can you tell us a little bit about the healing, the drumming and healing?
I'm writing a book at the moment, actually, that talks about certain aspects of this. There's numerous ways in which drums are utilized in healing. So the two paradigms I usually use for the two approaches to drumming and healing are rhythmic entrainment intervention therapy, which is music medicine. So it is rhythms used to affect an individual. So that's not participatory. The person receiving that is not performing, playing an instrument at the time. And then the other type is participatory. There's lots and lots of approaches to this. The one with the best science behind it is the health rhythms group empowerment drumming. The guy who put it together, Jeff Strong, was a drummer first and foremost. And now he's doing this amazing psychiatric work with no psychiatric credentials whatsoever and receiving a great deal of recognition even in the psychiatric world. What he did to start out was he went around with traditional drum healers. And what they would do is when there was an individual in their community, the traditional drum healer would go and they would observe the individual and see what behavior they were exhibiting. So, for example, you might have a self-stimming autistic individual. And then they would play the drum and seek a rhythm that affected the behavior. So Jeff studied with those guys and then realized that the same rhythm has a pretty good chance of affecting the same symptomology, regardless of age, language, culture. Rhythm processes quicker, deeper in the brain than any of the other attributes we analyze music in. Pitch, intonation. The theory is, it requires more testing, is that these rhythms going deep in the brain have the ability to allow that individual, they kind of reprogram a little bit and allow the individual to process information better.
Does it matter what percussion instrument you use? Like, is there a specific drum that you lean more towards using with therapy, or is it just completely based on the rhythm, so it doesn't matter?
The rhythmic entrainment intervention is actually a complex intake where you really gather a great deal of information about the individual symptoms, and then you create a CD.
Okay.
And he's recorded all the rhythms and has a data bank. And then he'll create for each individual a custom set of CDs.
Oh, so it's like mixing medication. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Getting to the types of drums do you play? When you do drum circles or performances, what kind of drums and rhythms do you lean towards?
I've studied a great deal of African, a lot of West African, a lot of Central African, a variety of different Middle Eastern styles, a certain amount of tabla. In Chicago, I was studying with a gentleman named Quentin Shaw. So there's a variety of instrumentation. I'm strongest on the African stuff, but I also see it as a continuum of rhythmic expression. Mm-hmm. I've played a lot of African rhythms on Middle Eastern instruments. I play for belly dancing regularly on African. I'm quite sure I wasn't the first or even among the first to do that.
Hey, if you can get a live drummer, I don't care if he's playing a dunebek or a djembe, just play something.
I'm excited to have you here.
That's... I know, yay! Yeah.
With the Flammable Babylon Percussion Ensemble, which is a loose agglomeration of percussionists that I have organized since returning to town, and we've been doing gigs around town. A lot of the things we do are almost more rhythmic games than songs, and one of them is universal language. And when we perform that piece, the goal is for each individual, as they join the rhythm, to add a rhythm from a different country, from a different tradition.
I saw you guys do this at the last Pure event.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one of the things we did there.
Have you wanted to play, or do you play any melody instruments?
I play Native American flutes and things like the, you know, the Middle Eastern midwiz and stuff like that a little bit. But I play them almost more as percussion instruments in a peculiar way. I mean...
Do you beat a drum with them?
No, that might get me in trouble. And those native flutes are kind of pricey to turn them into drumsticks. So, but I'm thinking actually more about rhythm and count when I play them than about melody.
What are the other members of Flammable Babylon? Are they all drummers?
They're all percussionists. We have been blessed by having Holly Riggs join us. And she is a singer-songwriter poet, which is a blessing because one of the things that's important to me at events is to do some of the traditional chants. But yeah, most of the players are primarily percussionists.
And the first time I saw you perform is something like 6 years ago, maybe 6 years ago-ish, at something down at the Discount Music Center. About how long have you been playing? Obviously, it was longer than 6 years because you looked very comfortable when I saw you performing.
I think that at least 20 years, 20-some years. You know, I missed out, and I'm jealous of the African and Middle Eastern dudes who grew up with it, because drums were not considered a desirable sound in the family home while I was growing up. So I actually did not have any drums, play any drums, until I'd moved out. So I missed an entire developmental period, you know, where I could have been getting my chops up, you know, for 20-some years. But about 20 years.
And so how did you decide, like, were you just like, I'm moving out and I'm getting a drum? Like, what did that
it happened in that order. I moved out about as soon as I could. But within a few months after I moved out, I did buy a set of congas. Now, I didn't have a teacher and I didn't know what I was doing. So I sucked for a really long time. I didn't really have any formal instruction until one of my sisters and her husband and I opened a gallery right downtown. But I'd made a bunch of drums. My first drums, other than those congas, were drums that I made. They were made out of different size steel drums. and I'd cut the bottoms out and put rawhide heads on both ends. So I had a whole variety of these things. And a couple hippie kids who had done marching band came in. And so my first lessons were them showing me things like triplets. And for me, the notion, it shows just how bad I sucked. The notion that you could play in a three count instead of a four count, that was a new idea, you know? But then from there, it was a rapid acceleration to seeking out, you know, more teachers, more different styles of drumming, more different types of drums.
I'm stuck on the same thing.
Picturing just like hippies and marching bands.
These band geek hippies.
Yeah. Drumline. Paradiddle. No. Paradiddle.
Yeah,
So who are some of your favorite drummers?
That's a good question.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good job, Jeremy.
For kit drummers, there's a dude named Rashid Ali. Unbelievable, monster drummer. And he became John Coltrane's drummer at the end of John Coltrane's career. So all the really crazy, Rashid Ali was usually the drummer for all of that. And then by accident I found him, and he recorded on a Henry Rollins spoken word CD called Everything. And I wasn't even paying attention to who the drummer was until I was like, wow, this drummer's got ludicrous chops. And then that's when I broke out the liner notes and I'm like, Henry Rollins and Rashid Ali, how did that happen? That was almost as incomprehensible to me as Henry Rollins and William Shatner releasing that song. I mean,
anybody with William Shatner is incomprehensible to me.
So Rashid Ali, favorite kit drummer. And then in terms of world music, there's a Congolese group called Konono One, and they've released.
Is there a Konono Two?
No, Konono One is the name of the band.
As like I won, or like one. One is the loneliest number.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure why it's Konono One. It never occurred to me to think maybe because
I wonder these things.
Maybe it's, you know, the best. They were on Congotronics, and then they've got a couple CDs of their own, and their stuff is amazing. They have this low-tech, freaky, psychedelic sound that comes because they made all their pickups and everything, you know, out of cannibalized car parts and crap. And that gave them this trippy 60s kind of fuzz to everything that just really, really works with that style of music. Djembe players, I have an immense amount of respect for Mamadou Keita and Famadou Konaté. Both of whom I've been gifted with opportunities to study with, who are two of the preeminent, maybe the two most preeminent djembe players from Guinea. My favorite Middle Eastern is actually, there's a group called the Musicians of the Nile, and it's more folk than belly dance.
Mm-hmm.
But that particular group, the leader's name is, I think it's Mohammed Fadl. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And they do things that are songs and have vocals and all that. But on their CDs, every third or fourth track will be really intricate drum music. And I think the reason I like that is that style of Middle Eastern play is more polyrhythmic. A lot of the Middle Eastern belly dance music is usually, my teacher, Quentin Shaw, Moroccan style teacher in Chicago, called it pyramidical. You have a fundamental rhythm and all of the other parts are built on top of it. Polyrhythmic, you have multiple parts where it can become challenging to say where the one is. You may have parts that are, in terms of Western thought, would feel like they were in different time signatures being played simultaneously. It's a more complex approach to rhythm, and that's one of the things that I'm more drawn to.
Because it's interesting.
I think you would like that best.
I just like to use the word polyrhythmic.
Yeah,
I was just makes me sound really smart. polyrhythms, I enjoy them.
Mary's a music person. I don't understand it, but I love music. So,
okay, so going in a completely different direction, let's talk about jewelry.
Oh, okay. I can always talk about jewelry.
I like diamonds. No. So you have a website called, is it Spangy or Spangy?
Spangy Bling.
SpangyBling.com.
Yes.
Where you have lots of jewelry for sale, predominantly necklaces, and lots of really fun, big, chunky, you know, quote unquote, ethnic looking pieces, you know, really cool stuff with big pieces of amber and awesome big geodes and all kinds of stuff. So talk about how do you get into jewelry making and sort of what's your aesthetic?
What's my aesthetic? that's an interesting question. I got into jewelry making I don't know, a long, long time ago, 25 years or so ago. And the stuff I was doing originally, I was making out of taking apart pieces of CD players, stuff that I would buy at Skycraft. For a while, I would pick up plastic and broken pieces of mirror from car wrecks. And I built a little ghetto fume hood in one of the apartments I was staying in so that I could melt the plastic. And I made some outrageous stuff. And I always had success. You know, there were punk stores that I would sell that stuff to. You know, I made a bunch of jewelry and went to Chicago, and I walked into Wax Tracks with a briefcase full of jewelry and walked out with cash and a Harley jacket. You know, that was fantastic. I was like, wow. So I've always done, I've just been fascinated by that notion of decoration. I guess I've always had a more kind of a tribal aesthetic. And that is still what guides me and drives me. Now, I've studied a lot more, looked at a lot more tribal jewelry, African stuff, stuff from Papua New Guinea, the Philippines, just outrageous, outrageous, a sense of decoration. I've gotten more into now a lot of more glass, especially African trade glass. It's beads that were made in Europe for trade in Africa. Mm-hmm. So they were made for a different aesthetic. Bright colors, big glass beads, heavier pieces. I've always been a rock hound. I've always mm-hmm. been fascinated by gemstones since I was, you know, a kid. So getting into some of the healing properties and so on associated with beads has been really fascinating. I feel about jewelry a lot the way I feel about tattoos, which is that barring those rare instances where you choose to have the same tattoo as somebody, your tattoo is always more fun if you never see it on another human being. So with all the jewelry, all the pieces are one of a kind. What else would you like to know about the bling?
This isn't really a question, but I was perusing your website and I got tickled by, like, on the pieces that I've sold, you have these big, you know, sold, which is kind of cool because you're like, oh, I wish I could have had that. But one of the things I liked is on some of them, it didn't say sold. It said, like, bartered for awesome food or traded for cool art. I just think it's funny that you included that. I thought that was absolutely adorable.
I'm all about barter. The more I look at the changes that we all need to go through, the more I realize even more deeply that our current financial system is poorly conceived and has absolutely nothing to offer most of us. We would be much better off with a hunting-gathering gift economy. I'm all about barter. I like giving things away. One of the pieces on there says, give away to a five-year-old, because a friend of mine was by, and Mateo, who is five, just fell in love with this piece, and he came up to me, and he's like, but can I have it? And I'd done okay. That was at the Fringe Festival. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd done well. At the Fringe Festival. And so I made a deal with him where I've been trying to talk my friend Mark. I sold him this drum, and, you know, since then regretted it. I've been trying to trade it back off him. So we have this ludicrous drum trade going back and forth with different things getting involved and, you know, continuously being, being reevaluated. Mateo's his stepson. So when Mateo came up, I said, yeah, you can just have it, but I want you to go up to your dad and tell him that you traded the Giovanni djembe to me for it. So I gave it to him, but I did make him work for it. Of course, that didn't get me the drum back, but it did provide me with a few moments of intense amusement. And at that same festival, one of the things that I traded jewelry for was what do you call people that sell plants?
Plant sellers.
Okay, there was a plant seller there, and they had pitcher plants, which are these amazing, freaky, carnivorous plants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I traded jewelry for was, a pitcher plant. So one of the things on the website says, you know, swapped for a carnivorous plant, and it's true. I traded, I traded a necklace so that I could have a carnivorous plant.
Everybody needs one.
They eat wasps. So in Florida, I think I need more.
Sure.
Yeah.
In both arenas of your life, where are you looking to go in the future?
I don't really have anything that would amount to a plan other than continuing to do more and more of what I'm doing. I've been doing more and more stuff with the healing drum and percussion things. One of the things I'm doing with the aforementioned friend, Mark DeMaio, we've been doing a lot of gong flow vibrational energy cleansings, which is a way of using traditional instruments and techniques to use music to break up the kludge in the energy body and provide the opportunity for that energy body to repattern. In that particular case, we're using gongs, singing bowls, and that range of instruments. And that's something that's been going very well and is deeply, deeply satisfying to do. Oh, when we were talking about drumming and healing, I got through one half of it. The other half is the participatory part. And the primary method that I've studied to do that is the Health Rhythms Group Empowerment Drumming. And to put that one, like really, really nutshell it, what they did was they tried a whole bunch of different things to see what forms of drumming were going to get them certain specific medically testable results. The guy who put them together, Barry Bittman, is a, I think he's a CEO of the Mind Body Wellness Institute or something like that. It's a research hospital. I'll have to check the name of it. But it's a research hospital. He is a research scientist. He was at a Bernie Siegel cancer survivors event, and there was a drum circle, and he was like, this has to be good for you. So he set out to prove it, and they did a number of tests. So what they showed was, after they got the protocol ironed out, which is now the Health Rhythms Group Empowerment Drumming Protocol, and that protocol in a 1 hour session, initially the first thing they did was they showed that it increased killer T cell activity and increased the presence in the system of certain proteins associated with cancer resistance. So it has profound results and implications. They took that into a couple other areas. They showed that in elderly care facilities that it improved employee morale and employee retention. Elderly care facilities apparently are the highest stress, highest employee turnover institutions in the medical industry. So one of the things they wanted to show was that this particular protocol could impact that. The biggest one they did was they took a bunch of people, got a baseline reading from them. Now, the baseline reading was looking at their actual genetics. And what they looked for was markers in the genes that are associated with the expression of hereditary stress-related disease. So certain forms of cancer, hypertension, all those things that that they have identified specific gene sequences for. Now, these gene sequences are either expressing or not expressing, but meaning that you can have a gene sequence that's part of your DNA that, if it is activated by stress, will produce results in your body that will lead to hypertension or certain forms of cancer or whatever. So they said, okay, here's our group, and here's all the things that they are genetically predisposed towards. So then they stressed them all out. Now, what they did to stress them out was they put them in darkened cubicles with jigsaw puzzles. And then they told them all, they said, there's $100 for whoever gets the most pieces in an hour. Then they had the proctor go around and tell everybody, you know, oh, you're doing really good. Everybody else is doing a little better, but, you know, keep trying. Just keep trying. And then they went through and they found in that group, they found all these genes that had begun expressing for the diseases. Now, this is profound in many ways. Like, nobody, they at no point during here's the thing that, I mean, it's no meaner than what most of us do for a day job. I mean, that describes my day job for 20 years. You know, I worked in educational publishing. I sat at a desk or in a cubicle and tried to put together, you know, into textbooks that ultimately were intended to propagandize our young. So it's not like I had the illusion that what I was doing was particularly good for the planet. So I should have had enough sense not to be there anyway, but that's what I did. And, you know, so I'd take whatever garbage they gave me, like a jigsaw puzzle, and try to turn it into a book. And I think it's an unintentional and ironic side effect of the study that what most of us do for a living is sufficient stress to tell our genes to try to kill us. But
just end it all.
Let's leave that aside. Well, it is profound that level of stress is enough to make our body
way, like, just trying to survive and be like, okay, this is too much. I know, really.
Well, it's
I'm
it's,
literally in a cave at work. I'm like, no life.
At that point in the study, I mean, before we even got to the health rhythms part and the results part, my jaw was just dropped because, to me, that part of the study was saying that the normal stress associated with our jobs is enough that our bodies will begin trying to send us a signal yeah. that what we're doing is self-destructive. But they didn't draw that conclusion. That's my own interpretation of that particular portion of it. So then, after they stress everybody out, they find all these genes that are flipped on. So then they split them into three groups. One group has to stay in the dark and continue trying to do jigsaw puzzles. One group gets to go into, you know, a lounge and put their feet up and look at a magazine, drink a Coke, whatever. And one group undergoes the health rhythms, group empowerment, drumming protocol. The group that continued being stressed, if I remember correctly, there was no change. So that 1 hour was enough to flip the genes that were going to flip. The other group that got to go read a magazine, drink a Coke, whatever, again, minimal change. What we would consider relaxation was not sufficient to address that situation. The group that went to do the health rhythms protocol showed, if I remember right, 13 distinct instances where a gene that was expressing for a hereditary stress-related disease turned off. This is the first study that ever showed that behavior can change us on a genetic level. So that was the health rhythms aspect of the drumming and healing thing. So that's another aspect. You're asking what comes in the future. Focusing on that kind of work is also another really, really important thing to me right now.
It's just crazy. Like, I really feel sick now. Just knowing that, like, I can't stop focusing on the fact that I'm killing myself every day, little by little.
Well, and that's not so much the point.
I know, but it stopped there, and I was like, oh my God.
But
I need to start drumming right now.
Well, I think...
Sure, you have a couple good years left in you, Tammy.
But I think that, and, you know, this goes beyond questions about drumming, but I think that with everything that's going on the planet right now, more and more people are becoming aware that we are in a time of radical change. More and more people are looking at that kind of thing and realizing that what we are being offered as a lifestyle within this culture,
it's ridiculous.
It is, if you really stop and look at it, you're like, wow, this is not really acceptable. This is not how I want to spend however much time I have.
You know who has a good working environment is people who work at Pixar. They get all kinds of fun classes, and when they're working on Finding Nemo, they all went scuba diving. Come Sweet. On, that's nice, right? I don't know how to scuba dive.
I mean, I guess if you're into that kind of thing. Ocean freaks me out.
Did you see that video of the octopus that stole the camera?
No, I seen the one where the octopus kept picking the winning soccer teams.
Sorry. No, you're right.
Will he do lottery?
Well,
I could use a lottery tip.
It was like I don't know. He might have already been killed. Like, people were trying to kill this octopus that was picking all the different winning, because he picked the winning soccer teams every time. I don't know.
People are so angry about soccer.
I don't get it either. It's just something else to get angry about, I guess. I don't know.
So anyway. I know we didn't prep you for this, but we always like to end our interviews with our guest yipping for us. So would you mind giving us your best yip?
My best yip. Just yip?
That's it.
Yip!
Yay!
Thank you so much for coming on Yip Podcast.
So that was our interview with Grey Wolf.
awesome.
Anyway, he's very cool. If you're ever in the Central Florida area, he does stuff all the time. So you can find him on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always got something going on.
So do you have other music for us?
Why, yes, I do.
Awesome.
Yes, I do. Indeedy, I do. So the second group is partially just to indulge myself because I miss So You Think You Can Dance. And this group is a group I heard about on So You Think You Can Dance. So the second group is called Florence and the Machine. It's the recording name of an English pop artist named Florence Welch and all the other musicians who provide all the backup instrumentation, etc. for her.
Etc. Sorry.
So much for my train of thought. Like it was going anywhere anyway. She's got an amazing, amazing voice. So the three we are going to hear, the first one is called Blinding, which has this really cool hook. The second one is called Girl with One Eye, which is really sassy and kind of slinky. It's got really thin instrumentation. I think it would look really awesome for a solo. I don't know if it's got enough layers to work with a group, but for a solo, or I think it'd be super cute, flirty and awesome and rare. And the third one is called Howl, which we thought, well, I'm not gonna make Tammy share this. I thought it was funny because we had Grey Wolf on the show and we have a song called Howl.
Cute.
You're like, I don't even know what to say. I guess I'll say cute. So lame.
No.
Moving on.
Never.
So this is Florence and the Machine. Like Tammy,
I think it was the second one that was kind of like girl with flirty. One eye. Yeah, you can be flirty weird. If you have one eye.
You can. I know people with only one eye.
Well, there you go. Yes, you do. I know a person with one eye.
Yes, you do. Actually, I know two people with one eye.
Oh,
but they're not related.
Oh,
that would be weird. I really like Girl with One Eye as well. I do like the last one, though, because I'm a sucker for a good belting chorus, so. But the whole CD is really good. I really like their music. So check out Florence and the Machine. That's all I have to say about that. What do you have to say about that, Tammy? Anything?
No, nothing additional.
No, nothing additional.
What's going on around town, Tammy?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Mary. November 5th through the 7th in Lincoln, Nebraska,
Bennu Tribal is presenting Tribal Dreams. Blue Lotus will be teaching workshops, as well as our friend Sharon Moore.
Yay, Shay!
November 6th in Atlanta, Georgia is Atlanta Bellypalooza 2010. That's fun, Belly Palooza. Anyway, Diane Adams will be instructing, as well as Aziza Nawal and Sanam. They're going to have basically like tribal workshops, cabaret workshops, and I think like Bollywood workshops. So interesting stuff going on over there.
Nice variety.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I'm like, well, that's fun. You know, you can take a little bit of everything. November 6th in Lafayette, Louisiana. You can take a double veil and improvisational tribal workshop from Tribe Habibi Bazaar. So that should be fun. I've kind of wanted to take a double veil workshop. I think that would be cool to learn. Although I don't know if I'm coordinated enough. Anywho.
I don't know if I can spin without falling over. That much. I like to
Yeah,
because
they do like those barrely turns.
Yeah, the
them.
Barrel. Ooh,
those are very pretty. On November 19th through the 21st in Linthicum, Maryland.
Linthicum. Oh, that's fun.
Sorry about if I mispronounce the city. Is Belly Dance National Competition. But it's not only a belly dance competition. They're also going to have workshops, of course, with Michelle Joyce, who I think that would be awesome to take a workshop from her. She's got like a million DVDs out. Rania Renee and Aradia and a bunch of other people.
Are you competing, Tammy?
No, I am not.
Do you want to compete? Maybe it's not too late to enter.
It might be a little pricey for me to get it.
We could have a bake sale.
We could have a bake sale. Like your podcast bake sale.
That'd be really fun to have your podcast bake sale.
And people always ask us, do you guys take donations for my baked goods?
Yes, yeah, we'll send you a brownie. Give us $5. Here's your Yip brownie. We need a stamp that has Yip on it so we can like... like in like peanut butter cookies, instead of doing the little crisscross, you could be like yip, and we could sell them online.
I was thinking like in like the little you know frosting, like the ones that you write stuff with. You just put Yip Podcast Love Mary and Tammy.
Or if we had a cookie cutter that was in the shape of a yip, we could have Yip cookies. That'd be really cute. I like to eat the Y first. I like to eat the P. I like to eat the I dot. So many ways to eat a yip. It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
And then on the little I dot, we could put like a little happy face.
That'd be awesome. Or it could be a thought bubble like, what am I doing here? No, don't eat me. Yip. Don't eat.
All right, so.
So what do you guys think? Yip cookies? Vote.
Yip cookies.
Yip cookies.
Ooh, or yip brownies. Yeah, so
or
anywho.
We could have a cupcakes that have a filling, and when you squeeze them just right, they go, yeah. That'd be creepy, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
There's a little belly dancer trapped in my cupcake. Well, I bet she's yummy.
Yep. Anyway, for information about non-cupcake stuff and more like the events and workshops I discussed, you can go to our website at www.yippodcast.com.
Yep.
You can do a bazillion things on our website. Well, not a bazillion, but some stuff. You can do things like join our mailing list, tell a friend. And then
wait, are they telling a friend to join or are they telling a friend they joined?
They should tell a friend that they joined and then be like, it's so cool, you should join too.
Peer pressure. We support peer pressure at your podcast.
Totally.
Totally.
You could email us at email@yourpodcast. You could Skype us at Yip Podcast. You can call us at 321-441-3933. You could also just click little linkies and go to our tribe at tribes.tribe.net/Yip Podcast or find us on Facebook. Click. That was me clicking on our little Facebook
click.
Link.
Sound effects. We don't exactly. have to pay for them because we're gifted.
So see, lots of things you could do on our website.
Totally.
So anywho, for this episode of Yip, this has been Tammy.
And this has been Mary.
Yip!
I just sit there and do work because no one's watching me. Big Brother's not there. So
that you know of.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry. Let me try that again. Okay.
Two people were related and they only had one eye. You'd think that, like, whoever was the first one would have, like, learned from their mistake. Like, don't play with pencils.
Aww.
Or something. And then, like, they didn't, and now their cousin only has one eye, too. Ew. It's kind of gross. I'm going to edit this out.
I'm glad, because it's getting really disturbing. Oh, I love Las Vegas. I don't even gamble. I just like to watch people be weird.
If I want to watch weird people, I can go down to South Beach.
Oh, South Beach is like, blah. Anyway.
I guess that's really if I want to watch people being skanky.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's clarify.
Let's offend everybody.
Oh,
and if
please.
I'd like to go to Boringville, I'll go to... No, just...